Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Sunday, the New York Times ran a story about a plan to flood San Francisco with news on homelessness. On June 29th, 30 media outlets in the Bay Area will come together for a day of coordinated coverage on the homeless crisis. The effort is being led by the San Francisco Chronicle. Audrey Cooper, the editor-in-chief of the Chronicle, told the New York Times San Francisco bureau chief Thomas Fuller that the premise of the effort is to create a wave of coverage that will force politicians to come up with solutions. She said, quote, "You will not be able to log onto Facebook, turn on the radio, watch TV, read a newspaper, log onto Twitter, without seeing a story about the causes and solutions to homelessness," end quote. The New York Times piece is receiving attention across the country. Reporters in other states are now talking about similar efforts, but the piece is also being criticized for referring to San Francisco's homeless population as clumps of humanity. Daniel Denver wrote a response to the New York Times piece called Clumps of Humanity. This New York Times article treated homelessness in just about the worst way possible. Daniel Denver is a writer with Salon. He covers criminal justice, policing, education, inequality, and politics. He's a former staff reporter with the Philadelphia City Paper. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And we're joined by Michael Stoll, executive director and editor of the San Francisco Public Press, a local nonprofit news organization that publishes a website and quarterly newspaper. In the fall of 2014, SF Public Press ran an in-depth special called The Elusive Promise of Homes for the Homeless. And Michael joins me in studio. Hi, Michael. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And Gail Holland is an award-winning investigative journalist who covers homelessness and poverty for the Los Angeles Times. Hi, Gail. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. As we always do on Your Calls Media Roundtable, we start off on a positive note and highlight really good journalism this week. So, Michael Stoll, let's start off with you. What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, I'm sure it's no shock. I'm sure everyone knows by now that Police Chief Greg Suhr was asked to resign yesterday over a series of scandals and mishandlings of misbehavior by his staff and at least three shootings by police officers that have caused a lot of controversy, including one yesterday in the Bayview of a woman who apparently, according to reports, was unarmed. And I think what was good about the story in the Chronicle this morning, the lead story, and they had three pieces about it from all different angles, was that it actually had a lot of context, a lot of history, going back 10 years or more to when Suhr was lower down in the department and was involved in the Fajitagate scandal, where police officers were harassing some Mexican folks just trying to get a burrito or a fajita, and all the way through a number of police actions that have been criticized as heavy-handed, and also talking about some of the more progressive community policing efforts that the police chief has engaged in. So I think it was a well-rounded piece. It was had historical context, and we should see more quick breaking news journalism like that.
You mentioned the woman who was shot yesterday. I noticed in the media that we didn't have her name, but now we do. Her name was Jessica Nelson. She was a 27-year-old unarmed black woman. The Chronicle has a piece today, "No Sign of Weapon on Woman Shot to Death by SF Police Sergeant." I'm really glad you brought up context, Michael, because I think in this instance, we really need context. We need to know how many people were shot? What happened? We had public defender Jeff Adachi on a couple of weeks ago talking about this. And then you've got the racist texts. So what are your thoughts on the challenges of putting all of this information in a story? And how did the Chronicle get it right?
Well, the Chronicle just read its own clip file, which often is a neglected technique when you're racing to get the first story online. And I think it shows that there's an increasing attention to getting it right rather than getting it first, and also a recognition that San Francisco's problems have not formed overnight. And I think the less there's a sense of collective amnesia, the better we're able to make public policies, including HR decisions at the highest levels.
All right. So kudos to the San Francisco Chronicle for its piece about the resignation of Police Chief Greg Suhr, which included a lot of context. And over the next week or possibly next Friday, we will be discussing media coverage of these issues. That is Michael Stoll, Executive Director and Editor of the San Francisco Public Press. And what about you, Gail Holland? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
A story called OxyContin's 12-Hour Problem by my colleagues Harriet Ryan and actually former colleagues Lisa Guerin and Scott Glover. It's about a deep background that they spent a long time investigating to the whole OxyContin overdose death crisis and just over-prescription that has been in the news a lot. They went back and looked at the fact that Purdue Pharma that released OxyContin captured the market by saying it was a 12-hour drug, and that even their own tests showed that the drug for many people wore off much earlier than that, throwing them into the throes of withdrawal and kind of stoking their addiction to the drug. He mentioned deep dive and looking into things. This was like really looking deeply at the company that produces, you know, how they got where they got with it and what the problems might have been beyond the news stories that we've all read about what a crisis it is.
Hmm. I've been meaning to check this out. I saw it, but it was just too long. I don't think I had an hour at that point because it's such a lengthy investigation. Gail, do you know what sparked this investigation?
I believe that it was beat reporting. Mm-hmm. I believe that the first reporter who started on it was Scott Glover, and he had covered some of the drug overdose problems and became aware of that actually long before it was actually in the news. And they just kept digging and getting, incredible records from, if you do read the story, you'll see they got records from all over the country. And I'm sure they had to fight tooth and nail to get them because that's usually how one gets records.
Right.
So it was beat reporting.
Has there been any response from the company or the government?
From the government, not that I'm aware of. The company wrote a long response, and actually on our website on latimes.com, they wrote a response to Purdue's response, which is in and of itself very interesting if you're interested in the issue.
Well,
they're not done. There are more stories coming.
Well, we'll put a link to this. It's a lengthy, in-depth investigation by Gail Holland's colleagues at the LA Times, Harriet Ryan, Lisa Guerin, and Scott Glover. It's called You Want a Description of Hell? OxyContin's 12-Hour Problem. That looks like an amazing investigation. Thank you for that, Gail. And what about you, Daniel Denver? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Well, first of all, I have to agree with Gail that was a really amazing investigation in the LA Times. The piece that I was going to point to is from the Chicago Sun-Times a few days ago by reporter Andy Grimm. And it's not a big enterprise or investigative piece, but it looks for sort of like an beat reporting, it puts in a lot of critical context in terms of Chicago policing and the blue code of silence. There was a lawsuit filed in 2012 by two police officer whistleblowers who reported corruption in the department and then alleged that they were punished through really horrible assignments and even threats. And interestingly and disturbingly, the city of Chicago, defending the suit, is trying to keep the words, the code of silence and blue veil and thin blue line, out of the courtroom, even though Mayor Rahm Emanuel has used just those words in recent months in the wake of the video of Laquan McDonald's shooting to describe the culture of secrecy in the police department. So it's an interesting short piece that manages to put in a lot of critical context about policing problems and the culture of secrecy in Chicago.
All right, so kudos to Andy Grimm at the Chicago Sun-Times. And that is Daniel Denver. He is a writer at Salon covering criminal justice, policing, and politics. Let's dive in now and talk about this effort by virtually every media organization in the Bay Area. KALW is going to take part in this. Your Call will take part in this, as well as Cross Currents. On June 29th, these outlets are coming together for a one-day coordinated coverage of the homeless crisis in San Francisco. And this got attention in the New York Times last Sunday, and now reporters across the country are talking about this. First of all, Michael Stoll, the San Francisco Public Press is also going to take part. What is the overall goal of this project?
Well, it's actually still in formation, and there's a lot of meetings among at least 30 different organizations centered at KQED, and Mother Jones is also one of the lead organizers, Mashable, and other news organizations that aren't necessarily local but have local headquarters. And they're all kind of focused on what they are calling a crisis of grave civic importance. And I think beyond that, there's still a lot of room to discuss what solutions are possible. There's this idea that's been floating around the journalism community for a number of years called solutions journalism. Everybody has a different definition of it. But the idea is not to stoke cynicism, which is often the what many people take away from coverage of really dire problems of conflict and suffering on the streets, and turn it around and focus on what are the opportunities to actually make headway in solving something that is seemingly so intractable. And there's been good journalism and bad journalism about this topic, sometime in the same publication, sometimes on the same day, and I think that there's been a lot more thought put into what kind of questions do you want to ask in order to generate ideas for solutions and solicit ideas for solutions from the community. And there have been many community forums organized by advocacy groups, by city agencies, all kind of around the same theme of what do we do next. There is absolutely no consensus, and I think part of the issue is that the homelessness problem, if you can even call it one thing, is so complicated. The populations you're talking about are so diverse that there is absolutely no one solution to homelessness. Mm. It is a suite of many different ideas, and you can sit in one room with a bunch of average San Franciscans who are moderately well informed and come up with 100 ideas for solutions. I think the role of journalism is to take those ideas, synthesize them into what are the actual bold ideas for doing new things, and in investigating why those things haven't happened, what the roadblocks are, and finding the accountable people and asking them to reply, and also empowering the community to step up and take action. And you also, in that process, need to listen to all voices. You need to listen to the people who are experiencing or have experienced homelessness, people who have been involved in the system and trying to change it, as well as neighbors who often sound cranky and dismissive and scared and angry.
Here in San Francisco, the official number is about 7,000 homeless people. More than 850 young people are homeless. Homeless advocates say the number is much higher, and the population's also getting older. And Gail, according to the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, last year there were 47,000 homeless people in the city and county of Los Angeles. What do you think of this effort here in the Bay Area to get all of these media organizations together to write about this? On June 29th.
I think it's very intriguing. I think it could potentially be a great idea. I don't know enough about it, however, is this going to be in the form of editorials or in the form of explanatory journalism or all of the above?
Sounds like all of the above.
I think it could be good. I think that my own feeling is that, from my own reporting, that it's most of the solutions that I've seen tried or tried to look at, it's so important to spend time with seeing how they work out on the street, because it's amazing that, you know, it's the ultimate Rashomon, right? The way that it actually works for the actual homeless people, the way it actually works compared to what politicians say in, like, the County Board of Supervisors or City Hall. There's so much jargon that kind of, I think, disguises what's really going on. Mm. So I would hope that there would be a focus on on-the-ground reporting.
And Daniel, what are your thoughts on this? I was struck by something, many things in the New York Times story, but one of them, the reporter Thomas Fuller wrote, "Advocacy is a longstanding taboo in American journalism, making reporters and editors wary of discussing solutions to the problems they highlight in their coverage. One rationale for this is that journalists who advocate causes might be selective in their reporting or biased in their news coverage." What did you think about that line, the fact that he raised advocacy in this piece, and whether or not journalists will be advocates in this project?
Well, even though I didn't like a lot about that piece because it seemed to approach homelessness from the standpoint of housed people having problems with homeless people, I did find that sentence interesting. And it has, I think, advocacy has in some ways been a taboo for a long time in American journalism, but it's also sort of snuck in below the radar because it's part and parcel of any investigative or long-form journalism. You really can't write more than, I think, like 2,000 or 3,000 words about something without eventually making it pretty clear to the reader that you're identifying a problem and hinting pretty strongly at proposed solutions. So I think kind of on a formal level, people in mainstream journalism shy away from what's termed advocacy journalism, but I think anytime you see a major investigation into OxyContin in the LA Times or into binding arbitration agreements in the New York Times, I think it's not very hard to figure out that the reporters are identifying a problem and proposing solutions.
Michael, what are your thoughts on that?
It is, definitely something that journalists shy away from. Not all journalists. There are advocacy publications, and there are increasingly a large number of advocacy blogs. I think what is really missing from most people's diet is on-the-ground reporting about facts so that opinions can be informed. There is a space for solutions journalism that falls in between advocacy and straight reporting about problems. And if you think about it and you work with the community to prompt people to come up with creative solutions, there is no end to what's possible. We did a project about a year and a half ago on solutions to the overall housing crisis. Mm-hmm. We did a day-long conference called Hack the Housing Crisis, and we brought in people to talk about ideas that could be implemented that were not already in place or on the agenda of legislators or city staff. That were creative, outside the box solutions, that were feasible within a short period of time, effective, affecting hundreds of thousands of people, either directly or indirectly, and simple enough to understand so that they're not sort of clouded by a lot of amendments and riders and the complexity of proposals that often come down that. You may think you're approving one thing, but you're actually approving 12 other things that go against what you're trying to do. Really boiling down what a solution is, something that's contextual in terms of identifying solutions that have been tried either locally in the past or are currently going on in other communities that seem to have worked, and trying to find parallels that may be adopted here. And then lastly, talking about data-driven solutions based on solid research, accurate data, and drawing on other documentation. So it can be done, but I think where it differs from advocacy is you're not focusing on you're not saying that this is the solution. You're not saying that this should happen. Mm-hmm. You're saying that this has happened in other places. It's an idea. Go investigate the positive and the negative of this idea and frame it for the community so that the community can debate, so that voters can be more informed, and people can participate constructively instead of reactively and fearfully.
Michael Stoll is executive director of the San Francisco Public Press. Daniel Denver is a writer with Salon. Gail Holland is an award-winning investigative journalist who covers homelessness and poverty for the LA Times. And have you heard about this collaborative effort between almost every outlet in the Bay Area? On June 29th, 30 outlets will come together for a day of coordinated coverage on the homelessness crisis. The effort is being led by the San Francisco Chronicle, KQED, Mother Jones. We're going to be involved. We're going to do a number of shows on this issue. So what are your thoughts on this? What do you think of reporting on homelessness? And what about this question of advocacy? I mean, if you see such a huge problem like the one we have in the Bay Area, it seems very logical that you would interview advocates, government officials, to find out what people can do about this. So what are your thoughts on that? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Gail, what are your thoughts on this? Because how long have you been covering the issue of poverty and homelessness in Los Angeles?
I've been covering it, I believe, 2.5 years, and I actually have very strong thoughts on this. I began my career in advocacy journalism, and the limits that I saw were advocacy journalism can become cheerleader journalism, which I highly dislike. I know none of your guests are talking about doing that, and neither are you, but I just thought I should throw it out there that sometimes advocacy journalism is just cheerleader for groups that the reporters have become convinced have the answer. I also think that it's really important to look at the politics of the homeless thing is extremely political, and that's what's going to make something happen or not happen. And most of the homeless advocates that I talk to think they have the answers. There's things that have worked. They've worked for a while. They haven't worked forever. There's some very large structural issues behind this whole thing that really, I think, go right to the heart of kind of our government and our way of life and just our attitude about people and personal responsibility versus taking care of the unfortunate. I would be concerned that by focusing, also so many advocates they're advocates for their programs. That's a problem. They're going to be cheerleading for their programs. So those would be the things, if I was involved, I would try to avoid. Hmm.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and let's continue that after the break. Today, it is our media roundtable, and we're talking about this coordinated effort that's going to happen in the Bay Area on June 29th. You're going to see a lot of articles, radio pieces, TV pieces about homelessness in the Bay Area. So what do you think is missing from coverage right now, and what would you like to see on June 29th? In fact, we're going to be involved, so we'd love to hear from you. What kind of shows would you like us to do? This is your call, and we'll be back after this.
And you are listening to Your Call on KALW. I'm station manager Matt Martin, and we are in the final half hour of our May membership campaign, endeavoring to get as close as possible to our goal that we set at the beginning of this drive. And that was $375,000. We came into today needing $57,000 to get there. By now, we've got it down to $32,000 to go, and we want to push as close as we can to that goal to keep this station strong. This is such an important resource. This conversation today shows you why. Make a call, 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917, or KALW.org. 800-525-9917. Every single call right now makes such a difference for this station. Dig deep, give what you can. 800 425-9917. Thanks to Kate Ricks in Oakland. She went to KALW.org. Liba Morimoto in El Cerrito. Duncan Patterson in San Francisco. These are people who, like you, value independent, local journalism. They want to see it stay strong. 800-525-9917. These conversations are so important. We maintain this space together. It's a collective effort. Thank you to everyone who's been involved so far. KALW.org. 800-525-9917. Thanks to William Sheeter in San Francisco, Charles Kahn in Berkeley, Stephen Zippin in Oakland. These are all people who just say one thing. I value this programming. I value this station. I want to see it stick around. I want to see it do more. You make it possible. The final half hour, 800-525-9917, KALW.org. We're going back to this conversation. Keep it strong. 800-525-9917. KALW.org. Thank you.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's our Friday Media Roundtable. Today, we are talking about coverage of homelessness. On June 29th, 30 media outlets in the Bay Area will come together for a day of coordinated coverage on the homeless crisis, including the San Francisco Chronicle, KQED, Mother Jones, KALW, San Francisco Public Press, and many others. We'd love to hear from you. What do you want from this effort? There's such a wide range of reporting. You can do a profile of someone who's homeless. You can provide context about how we got here, because let's remember, it was highly unusual to see older homeless women on the streets of San Francisco in the 80s and part of the 90s. We just didn't see it. And now we see it everywhere. So there's context. There's solutions. So what are your thoughts on what kind of reporting you would like to see? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Daniel Denver. He wrote a response to the New York Times piece about this effort called Clumps of Humanity. The New York Times article treated homelessness in just about the worst way possible. Daniel writes about a number of issues, including inequality at Salon. Michael Stoll is executive director and editor of the San Francisco Public Press, a local nonprofit that publishes a website and a quarterly newspaper. They will be involved in this effort. And Gail Holland is an award-winning journalist who covers homelessness and poverty for the Los Angeles Times. And let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Kate in San Francisco. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm really glad you're doing this show, because I also read that piece in the New York Times, and I was really happy to see it. I think it's way past time that we are talking seriously in depth about this issue and about solutions. One thing that I'm really hoping, and I actually wrote to the Chronicle saying this, I don't know if they paid any attention, but one thing I'm really hoping they'll be focusing on is the approach called Housing First, which is what's been used in places from Boston to Utah to Alberta, Canada, with a lot of success, which basically says you get people into long-term stable housing first rather than and add wraparound services rather than approaches that say, well, you know, we try to get people mental health counseling or drug treatment and then assume that that's going to lead them somehow into housing. You know, I also think we just have to be talking about income and the fact that when you're living in a place like San Francisco where housing is so expensive and so many people don't have the income, there's no way that people are going to be able to be housed, right, no matter how many hoops they're jumping through, you know, in terms of getting treatment or applying for benefits. And so, you know, I just hope that those are some of the solutions that are going to be explored in depth.
Well, thank you so much, Kate. Really important points here. Of the 155,000 older people living in San Francisco, 19,000 live below the poverty line. That's about $10,000 per year for a single person, or $13,000 for a two-person household. A lot of people are living off of their Social Security checks, which sometimes it's $1,000 and sometimes it's $700. So that's a really important point to make. This is in the city of San Francisco, where you cannot find a one-bedroom for less than $3,500 a month now. Daniel, what are your thoughts on Kate's comments?
Well, yeah, I think it was
Daniel?
Can you hear me?
Hold on. There you go. Go ahead.
Hi. I think it was a good point, and it's what I find puzzling about some of the head scratching over homelessness at a time of, you know, record-breaking income inequality and skyrocketing housing prices in the Bay Area and also in LA, which Gail is very aware of. And it's one thing that makes me a little nervous about one route that the solutions-oriented journalism could take, which is sort of like looking for a technocratic fix, when in many cases there's simply a lack of political will. I mean, there's a, if you log on right now to the San Francisco shelter waiting list, it's, you know, I'm imagining from when I checked a few days ago, hundreds of people long. And that's just for a shelter and not for the sort of permanent housing and services that people need. It's expensive, but I think it's not such a mystery what works. I think it's a matter of politicians, elected officials willing to spend the money to make it happen. Obviously, you can't get everyone off the street, but I think politicians often point towards really kind of meager efforts they're making to deal with homelessness as a cover for law enforcement crackdowns on people living on the streets.
Michael, what are your thoughts?
Well, we've definitely...
Go ahead.
We've definitely gotten into a space where it has gotten to a crisis point where the police are even afraid to approach homeless people, and they shoot first and ask questions later. That happened a block away from my house in the Mission District a couple of weeks ago with a man named Luis Gongora, who in 12 seconds after the police got out of their cars, he was lying on the street in a pool of blood. They claimed that he was holding a knife. There was a press conference the same day where the police were essentially blaming the victim, and I think that was part of the reason why Sir was ultimately shown the door. But it should not have gotten to this dire situation. This has context. It has history. There was an encampment, or there's a roving encampment in the Mission District that was in part created by the police trying to empty out the civic center in order to make life more pleasant for the tech community moving in, and many of them came to the Mission District. They created this great idea called the Navigation Center at 16th and Mission, which was supposed to be a stepping stone to permanent housing. And as a partial result of that and the Super Bowl sweeps of downtown, there was this encampment along Division Street, and many of whom were on Division Street waiting for social workers to come and pluck them out and bring them to the Navigation Center. So there was a push and a pull. Sometimes public policies can create unintended consequences. It's not just about money. It's definitely about money. Mm. At the same time, there's a real confusion. I talked to Sam Dodge, the mayor's new housing czar, and he said he didn't know within within maybe even $100 million how much the city was spending, because there are many different ways that you can count spending on homelessness. One of the big problems that they're working on now to create a Department of Homelessness is to try to merge the systems, the incompatible systems within the Department of Public Health and the Human Services Agency that have been warring. They've had opaque waiting list systems, and they've had these systems where nonprofits are picking their own clients.
So in San Francisco, are there reporters specifically covering the Department of Homelessness and how this money is being spent?
No.
At all?
What, specifically as a beat?
Yes.
No. Not that I know of. I think the person who has been most dedicated for the longest to the homelessness issue is Kevin Fagan at the Chronicle, and he's done really great contextual reporting, but he's also been pulled off onto 1,000 other stories because of cutbacks in journalism. And my hope out of this and other collaboratives that are rising up both locally and nationally is that it's not just a one-day splash
right
on the 29th, but an ongoing, coordinated conversation not just among journalists but with the entire community.
We're getting a lot of emails about that. What happens after June 29th?
Yeah, and by way of context, also there was a roundtable discussion in February at San Francisco State University, run by the Renaissance Journalism Center, and sponsored by the Silicon Valley Community Foundation. A lot of organizations, both journalistic and philanthropic, interested in ways to bring journalists in and talking with the community and talking about marginalized communities and talking about human rights and not just quality of life for people who are inconvenienced, but people who are suffering on the street.
So, Gail, you just heard that there's no beat reporter in the city of San Francisco closely following the Department of Homelessness and the money that's exchanging hands. What about Los Angeles? You've got a number of stories. A recent one, Governor Jerry Brown backs $2 billion plan to ease homelessness across California. Homeless measures take center stage, and Mayor Garcetti's budget proposal, that's the mayor of L.A., so are you the beat reporter that's covering homelessness in L.A. and how the money is being spent?
Yes, I have been I am the lead homelessness reporter, but we have at least four other reporters regularly writing about it.
And so,
because it's taken over the political stage here. Mm. And I'm still trying to concentrate on the ground, because that's what I think is important, to see how things are actually working for the subjects of these programs. And we are examining little by little the policies that they're putting forth with the new money that they're proposing.
And Daniel was talking earlier about holding government officials accountable when it comes to homelessness. As a reporter, can you talk about how you do that and how you think reporters should go about doing that?
I think that it's just looking really closely at all their proposals, whether they work, how much money, do they really have the money, or is it a wish list? Because that's a problem we've had. Whether they're going to sustain the effort, because I don't think anybody thinks a one-year budget bump is going to do anything about a 40, 50-year entrenched problem like LA's homeless situation. And I think just making it clear that they are accountable, you know, just examining everything they say and truth squatting it, make sure they're doing what they say they're doing, and as well as looking at the specific policies and whether they are likely to work or not.
What about questions? What are some specific questions you would ask? As you know, the city is now, they know that these reporters are going to shine a spotlight on the homeless problem in San Francisco. I mean, we have one shelter where older women sleep in chairs all night long. And, you know, because they're crouched over, they're getting gout, they have all of these health issues. I mean, they don't even have a pad to sleep on the floor. So the city knows these questions are coming. I'm sure they're preparing behind the scenes. But what questions do you think reporters should be asking?
Well, I think one of the most important questions, based on what I've heard from experts, is how are you going to generate not a one-time spending effort, but a funding source that will be renewable every year, unless and until the problem is conquered. That's what I don't think any of our cities in California have done, and that's what it seems to be called for. I think just putting a light, though, on the conditions of people are, and making sure to always put it at someone's feet, that this didn't just happen, that
right,
these people are out here. I also agree with the other speaker who said that it's really important to make sure, you know, to understand and explain to people the relationship between the housing crisis and homelessness, because it seems to me that a lot of people are polarized around thinking that homeless people are all drug addicts that want to live in the street because there's no rules, versus people who've been shoved out of their own neighborhoods by the housing crisis. And I think both of those questions are complicated and need to be looked at in terms of individuals again. I guess I'm kind of a one-note Charlie, but
I think
Daniel.
The sort of stories that Gail does in L.A. is precisely the way to do that, to put a human face on it, and I would argue that the New York Times piece, not to pile back on it, by looking at it solely from the perspective of annoyed homeowners, which is a totally, you know, a perspective that reporters need to pay attention to, but when that's the only perspective paid attention to, it's going to be, you know, subtly at least, or implicitly, advocacy journalism in favor of a law and order crackdown. When you put a human face on it and put some context, both in terms of the individual stories and the bigger picture of the housing crisis and the broader economic crisis, then I think the solutions you start looking toward are a little more holistic and might actually get to the root of preventing homelessness in the first place.
I think it's I have a little story about my neighborhood chat board next door, where after Chuck Nevius in the Chronicle wrote a story that was pretty much one-sided, reacting to a proposal by Supervisor John Avalos to slow down on the crackdowns on encampments in the streets. It sparked 235 messages in 2.5 weeks back and forth. It started out with many people saying, I am sick and tired of this problem. These are disgusting people. Get them away. I'm scared. Enough, you know, jail the bastards in City Hall who haven't dealt with this. And over the next couple of days, and I was reading hundreds of these messages, there was back and forth conversation. And by the end, I read at least a dozen really good solutions that I had not heard of, and some of them were really creative, maybe not totally feasible, but there is a hunger out there in the community to have somebody curate constructive solutions instead of griping, and neighbors feel isolated from one another, and they need some direction. And journalists are part of this community, as well as the neighbors, as well as city officials, most of whom mean very well, but don't have all the answers themselves.
Michael Stoll is executive director of the San Francisco Public Press. They are taking part in this June 29th coordinated day of coverage on the homeless crisis. Gail Holland is an investigative journalist who covers homelessness and poverty for the LA Times. And Daniel Denver writes about these issues for Salon. And let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. It's really shameful how our city, and I include the politicians, the government, and us, the people, have dealt with the homeless problem. And as I listened to the show this morning, one of the things that occurs to me is that the homeless problem is diverse, and it's being treated like it's one big problem. But there are various segments of the homeless problem that can be resolved by the homeless people themselves if they're given sufficient assistance. I was homeless for a while in the 1990s, and I didn't need any government assistance. I just needed to get my stuff together and work my way out of homelessness. However, there are people who cannot do that, and you see them every day on the streets, and I'm talking about the mentally disabled and some severely physically disabled people. And I would like to see, and I applaud the media for their work in bringing this attention to the forefront. And what I would like to see is an effort made specifically to help those people as a priority, so that that they can get the assistance that they absolutely need and will not be able to solve their homelessness without.
Gail, what are your thoughts about this? John makes a good point. I mean, you have people with mental illnesses on the streets. In 2013, the Homeless Youth Alliance, which provided youth with basic services and a place to rest, had to shut down because of high rent. And when I go to the Tenderloin and talk to homeless advocates, they say they're seeing so many more young people on the streets. St. Anthony's, which provides free food, recently reached out and let us know that they are seeing a lot more isolated isolated older women going in for food. They can barely pay their rent and they can't afford food. So John's right. I mean, there are many layers to this. How do you tackle that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I just think it's very complex, and just as government needs to look for long-term funding sources, probably if they're serious, the reporters have to put real time in. I think also, again, people who've been on the street, they are great explainers, and they can help. I think that there's so many issues, not just one issue that I think has come up here recently, and something that I wrote is that mental illness, there are degrees of mental illness, and there's also developmental disabilities that people have that may have gone unrecognized, that make it very difficult for people to continue to support themselves into their older age, which is why I think there's so many people out there that are like 45 to 60 and don't qualify for benefits yet. I also think that when you're in the street, there's a lot of trauma when you pull out of the street and when you pull out of drug addiction that you have to go through. This is what I understand from people who work with those people. So it's extremely complicated, and I think it's really important, yeah, to look at it issue by issue and not look for the silver bullet, because if there had been a silver bullet, somebody would have tried it in the past 40 to 50 years. And some of these people, some of these places that have announced great victories had a couple hundred homeless people. Mm. That is so different than certainly Los Angeles, but San Francisco also. And also you mentioned the young people. There's multiple collapses of systems, and the young people, it's amazing. I heard this, you know, originally in the abstract, that a lot of the people on the street who are young are foster children. And it just amazes me to go out there and how many times when I talk to a homeless young person, how many of them were in the foster care system. Mm. It's just staggering. And then the same thing with people who've been in the juvenile detention system. So there's a lot of sources or wellsprings of homelessness that need to be looked at as well.
And Daniel, final thoughts. We've got about a minute left. What really struck you about the reaction you got to your story in response to the New York Times story, your piece, Clumps of Humanity? This New York Times article treated homelessness in just about the worst way possible. We have about a minute.
Well, I got a response from a lot of people who had read the New York Times piece and been sort of surprised that homeless people were referred to as clumps of humanity, and they and I certainly are expecting the collaborative to be approaching homeless people in a much more respectful and humane fashion than the Times did. I wanted to piggyback on what Gail just said. I think it's a really important point that there are so many different causes of homelessness depending on different people, and that it really is, though, in many, many cases, the tip of a much larger iceberg of not caring for people in our society, whether it's foster children, whether it's people who've been through the juvenile justice system, whether it's people with mental health and addiction issues, whether it's people who are evicted from their housing because we don't provide anywhere near enough affordable housing in society. So while there are so many different causes, I do think it's an important point that homelessness is really where this broader lack of caring for the poor and economic justice in our society becomes visible and then really troublesome because we have to look it in the face.
Daniel Denver is a writer with Salon covering inequality and poverty. You can check out his piece. He wrote it in response to the New York Times piece about this collaboration on June 29th. Michael Stoll is executive director and editor of the SF Public Press. They'll be taking part in this collaboration. And Gail Holland is an award-winning journalist who covers homelessness and poverty for the LA Times. Daniel, Michael, and Gail, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. And I am joined in studio by General Manager Matt Martin. Hey, Matt.